Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still, where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my name.
Kick it in the guts, Barry.
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers, and you go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel, 3CR's look at the Australian film industry. And today we're going to be having a yarn with Yara Boo-Melhem, who is the co-producer of a film called Yolum Country, Healing Poison Country. It was made in collaboration with Bajima Elder Maitland. I wrote it all out and here I am falling behind on my thing. I'll just get his last name because it's pretty important, actually. Maitland Parker. He and his family worked with Yara making this film. And it's about the land that's around Whitanu. And you may or may not remember, but Whitanu is the town that was built to exploit the asbestos mines in the Pilbara. It was one of those shocking and dreadful so-called progress projects, which has been the bringer of death, and it is still a poisoned area. It hasn't been cleaned up, and in fact, as you'll hear in the interview, this is Australia's shame, in the sense that it is the biggest contaminated area in the southern hemisphere, a source of contamination which has been left there festering in the beautiful landscape of the Pilbara. Anyway, this is my chat with Yara. The film, Yolum Country, Healing Poison Country, is out in cinemas right at this moment.
Thank you very much for talking to me, Yara. You've made an interesting career following important stories from the First Nations people's perspective. And so this particular film, Yolum Country, is part of that oeuvre of work, isn't it? Can you tell me a little bit about how you came to the story?
We actually started making a different film about the 60,000 abandoned mines that are scattered across Australia, many of which have really terrible environmental and health legacies and are affecting communities. So we were going to, you know, visit a few different communities and look at this story from that angle, I suppose. And then we came across Maitland's story, Maitland Parker, who's a Bunjuma elder and is the protagonist of our film. And it was, I think it was the most insane story we'd never heard about, you know, about this Aboriginal elder who has become sick just as a result of living and working near the largest contaminated site in the southern hemisphere that's on his country. And he's trying to get it cleaned up. So we started filming with him still with this idea in mind that we would be looking at many different communities. But the more we spent time with him and the more our trust and access developed, the more we realized that we couldn't. Like, his story was such, it was like this epic. It was like this, you know, from a narrative perspective, like this great tragedy where there was only going to be one end for Maitland, but a legacy that he would leave behind that would inspire his people and others to try to act and rally around, you know, healing country and cleaning up Wet Noom.
Really, his story and the, because he calls his country Poison Country, and it's part of Pilbara region, very beautiful country.
Yeah.
And what your film is really showing and his story is showing is actually the many stories of the flagrant disregard, not only of culture, but of country in this country for profit.
Yeah, I think what we wanted to show is that this isn't just a devastated landscape, that there is culture, history, knowledge, stories embedded within Bunjuma country. And we worked very closely with Maitland, who's a co-writer and executive producer of the film. We co-created the film with him and his family. We worked very closely with them to integrate a lot of these cultural stories into the film. And I think that gives it a richness where you're not just showing that it's Poison Country, but you know, that is Bunjuma country too. And what does that mean? We really wanted to show the landscape as a character in the film and that relationship that Maitland has with the land, which is very symbiotic, allowed us to do that in a fuller way as well. And it kind of helped bring out this message that we really wanted to convey, which is that when country is sick, we are sick. And that we need to heal country for our own health and well-being. Because we know this, like if we live in a polluted, toxic environment, then that's going to affect our own health. And I think that this just happens on a larger scale, but it's the same message.
Well, it's interesting to me that you said that you didn't know this story, because I'm a lot older than you, and I can remember being a kid and seeing This Day Tonight, or it might have been Four Corners, a very long time ago, exposing the asbestos story. And it's great that you've actually gone and revisited it from a Western point of view, let alone a Indigenous point of view, because they built this thriving white community there as if it was a great story of progress, when in actual fact they were building it on a false promise that, and I'm assuming that many of the people that live there are also, like Maitland, had suffered from mesothelioma. I find it difficult to say that. I mean,
yeah.
The thing about it is that this is a common story and that people should be listening. When you took us with his family to the birthing tree and they were talking about that from a generational point of view, it really was telling Western-eyed people that this country has a history and a knowledge that you don't know anything about, and that it's a real boon that Matt Maitland is giving us and his family is giving us to actually explain what it is that's actually happening here.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I think I live on the east coast of Australia, and I think that the memory of the Wet Noom asbestos mine cases of the 80s and 90s, you know, it was kind of made national headlines, and it was, you know, it had Blue Death on Four Corners, and it was, you know, massive news for a few years. And the big Wet Noom cases of the 80s and 90s also really brought that into the forefront. But the focus was on the workers and the residents of Wet Noom Town. There wasn't much of an awareness or discussion about the contamination, other than its risk to those workers and residents. And there certainly wasn't a discussion about how the traditional owners felt about it. And I think that's what we tried to change with this film. We really wanted to center Maitland's perspective in the film. You know, not only, you know, he comes from a historically marginalized community, but there's also been this real, you know, in filmmaking, an extractive process in telling stories from those communities. And we really needed to avoid that, especially as we were looking at these extractive mining processes in the film and critiquing that. So we didn't want to fall into that trap, hence the co-creation model that we had with Maitland. And it's really interesting because we scoured the archives looking for when Banjima people were interviewed about Whitnoom and found it really difficult to find anything until 2021, when Maitland Parker was interviewed by NITV, which is the National Indigenous Channel. So that was extraordinary to us. I think for me, that was more of the kind of amnesia that we have around Whitnoom. It wasn't that we didn't know about the Whitnoom mine or the workers and the cases of the 80s and 90s. It's that we didn't consider the way that the contamination affected Banjima people, the traditional owners of that land. And that is something we try to correct in the film and really make sure that we centre Maitland's perspective.
The other thing that's really highlighted in this film, which is quite a criminal act, is this idea that, oh, yes, it's a contaminated land. We're not going to do it anymore. Yes, okay, we've got legal cases. So it's more costly to continue to do it because of the legal cases than it is to continue, so we'll stop doing it. So the Western Australian government does no cleanup. The corporations have got nothing to clean up here. So they've left this poison exposed, and I'm assuming continuing to expose all people who live in Australia and the world to this poisonous asbestos stuff. And for some reason or other, they think they have no responsibility. Bizarre.
So responsibility for the tailings dumps actually does fall with the Western Australian government. And, you know, being an investigative journalist, we did do quite a bit of a rigorous fact-based research about that responsibility and also what has the government done about it for the last, you know, 40-odd years. We found that there was, you know, successive government inquiries in the 90s that actually recommended a cleanup of the site, remediation of the tailings. And these recommendations were ignored. We looked at some government commissioned engineering reports about how they could actually remediate the site. And the last one was in 2015. And those engineers said to the government, if you don't, you know, secure these massive tailing dumps, which is, you know, this mine waste laced with the deadly asbestos fibres, then they will continue to spread for, and I quote, hundreds of years. And that's exactly what's happening. So now this site, which is the largest contaminated site in the Southern Hemisphere, they've detected asbestos fibres outside of this contamination zone. And this was completely foreseeable. And, you know, we then looked at FOI documents, Freedom of Information documents of internal correspondence within the government about, you know, why they decided not to clean it up based on the reports from the engineers in 2015. And part of it, most of it was due to cost. So, which is extraordinary considering the figures that they came up with at the time is just, you know, a tiny fraction of the mineral and mining royalties that the Western Australian government receives every year could be cleaned up. It's a terrible distinction for Australia to have the worst, largest contaminated site in the Southern Hemisphere. This is something that's impacting Banjima people. You know, Aboriginal people in Western Australia have the highest death rates from mesothelioma globally. That's because of Whitnoom. And there isn't a Banjima family that isn't touched by this. You know, this is really a huge human rights issue. It's something that Banjima people are now have resolved to do something about, and they've hired an amazing legal team to start looking into litigation options.
The film itself, the challenges that are involved, you've already touched on some of the elements that you've in the creation, which was a co-production, which means, of course, we're really following the last year of Maitland Parker's life, which was a great sadness, but also for him it must have been at least he was able to get it down, what had to happen, you know, what needs to happen. They talk about it, this is his story. It was really fascinating because it talks about it in their terms, which is an understanding of storylines, isn't it, really, in a way? Because what they're doing is telling us this was his story. This is the old man's story. This is his story. And we really get to understand something about that. So it had something to do with the storytelling, the fusing of a Western conception and a First Nations person's conception. And I must say that the business about them having to put on decontamination suits to go into the their tribal lands was an incredible piece of graphic information.
Yeah. And I think that was, that was one of the first, shoots that we did with Maitland, and just to give you a sense of the storytelling process, like, we made a decision very early on that because of Maitland's illness that we would cut scenes as we go, we would edit scenes as we go and show them to him. We are classic filmmakers, like, this is, there is an impact campaign around this film, but at our core we are filmmakers. And so, he was very curious about, why we kept going to the same spot to film what looked like the same thing over and over again. And he was just like, again, like, why are we doing this again? we've already done that. And I'm like, no, there's a process. And he finally understood it once we showed him that scene. And once we showed him, the kind of aesthetic and tone of, how we're going to, execute it, it really, really animated him. Maitland's been telling stories all of his life. This was just a new way for him to tell his story. And he loved the process, and we were always workshopping, scenes and, what it is we want to convey here. And, for us, this was a film that had to be emotionally led, even though there's a pretty rigorous fact base underlying the film, we were leading with emotion. He really appreciated that because, emotion is one of the best ways to convey an idea and to capture people as well, capture their imagination and make them realize something rather than tell them what to think, which is, I think, is not as powerful and doesn't really bring people with you on the journey.
I was talking to somebody about the use of emotion and the emotional landscape recently, and they were talking about how Western conceptualization of it is that you should be very rational all the time and that's the only information that's important. But what she said to me was it's actually really a failure of the rational process because it's or badly executed rational process because it's not including all the information.
No, how do you convey, this idea of not being able to go to a women's cultural site that is really important to you, so much so that it becomes a driving force for Maitland and his family in the film? That kind of process and that kind of narrative thread in the film was something that resonates so broadly amongst Aboriginal communities, anyone that we show it to, who's Indigenous, that it really actually fires them up in a way that it doesn't with many of, the non-Indigenous people that watch this film. There's a different understanding there and there's different information being translated through those scenes that resonate with Indigenous people that it doesn't with, anyone who doesn't think about those connections to land and to places. The kind of idea of deciding based on a rational basis or facts, it's not how decisions get made. Like, I worked in investigative journalism where I was like, these are the facts that should be enough and people will understand or want to, act accordingly. But that's not the nature of human beings. We do decide things or act based on emotion. So what we try to do with our filmmaking is bring you on this emotional journey that is very much underpinned by a rigorous fact base. And hopefully, hopefully that catalyzes people, to act based on the evidence, but also understanding, the emotional weight of some of these stories and ideas and, that what it triggers in you is something that is very real for people like Maitland and his family.
The archival footage that you put together is really fascinating too.
Yeah. So, I mean, Lang Hancock was, you know, considered or kind of self-described as the father of Whit Noom. He was one of the original owners of the mine, started, you know, asbestos mining there. And his pastoral station at the time, Mulga Downs, is where Maitland and his family actually, you know, spent a lot of time and worked there, and where there's a women's cultural site that Maitland is trying to get access to. But ironically, Lang Hancock and his staff had carted blue asbestos tailings, like waste, from Whit Noom and used it to, you know, pave roads in Mulga Downs around this birthing tree. So it really frustrated this process of Maitland trying to get access to this birthing tree on Mulga Downs station. Eventually, soil tests reveal that actually the area, particularly around this birthing tree, isn't contaminated. So we were able to gain access in the end, but it was a really trying process for Maitland. It really exhausted him. But we're so glad that we're able to make this really cathartic visit to the birthing tree, able to do that for Maitland, because it was very much a big wish of his. It was something that really drove him, that he really wanted to access the site, pass on knowledge to his family, you know, as a custodian of country, of those stories, of that knowledge. You know, it was so important for him to record that and pass that on.
That was particularly resonant here, because Vic Rhodes knocked down. There was a big battle for some birthing trees on the way to Ararat. The Victorian Vic Rhodes just wanted to move the road a little bit, and it was going to get rid of those trees. It was insignificant to them. They didn't understand the significance at all. It's a continuous fight for people to try and make it clear that you just don't have to despoil the landscape in this way.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, a birthing tree is particularly evocative because DNA, like blood, is in that ground, you know, generations of, you know, so many people. It's quite an evocative thing. And I think that that is something that we are still, as non-Indigenous people living on this land, grappling with. And, you know, because it was so important to Maitland, like, we kind of had to make sure that it happened. You know, it was, you know, one of his core wishes for the film. This is a story I want recorded in the film.
So for you, that was a learning process, wasn't it? You were learning about why that was so important. Like, you were responding to his need, but it was an education, wasn't it?
It was, because he would say, we would have constant, you know, conversations about what, you know, should we put in the film, what's important to you, you know, we need to kind of, you know, capture this sort of sentiment, and, you know, how should we do it, et cetera, et cetera. And anytime I asked him, you know, okay, what else do you want to capture for the film? Like, from a cultural perspective, he kept returning to the birthing tree. And I was like, look, you know, it's hard to access that site. Is there another place? You know, in my kind of really naive, ignorant, from that kind of perspective, I was like, look, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, is there something that's easier? Come on, like, let's try to work on something that's possible at this stage. Because, you know, it was really, really difficult for us to get that access. And it was taking a long time, and he didn't have time. Like, he just didn't. And so it really kind of, it took us a long time to get around to this fact that, well, you know, he's not going to forget about it. And so this is what he wants, and this is his film as much as it is ours. Like, we're making this together, you know, and so we had to figure out a way to make it happen. And luckily, you know, in a way, it's kind of like a beautiful land rights story, because it was because of Native Title land rights that Banjima people were able to negotiate this access, you know, faster than ordinarily they would have. And, you know, it's kind of like that, you know, it's like a small win.
Yeah. Yeah.
under that native title kind of lens. And, you know, it was kind of poetic in that sense. And so we were really so happy that that was something that we could do with this film, you know, throughout this kind of larger fight to get country cleaned up and to heal the land and heal people. Like, there was this kind of win for Maitland and his family that they could go under native title and visit their birthing tree.
The other thing that I was interested in was the you used drone shots, so we got some beautiful shots of the overview of the country, but also the you know, it actually looks like a horrible kind of cyst on the landscape, I'll have to say.
Yeah. But yeah, we call it like a cancerous tumor on the landscape.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
It's like the asbestos waste, like kind of clinging to these beautiful red gorges, in Whitnoom Gorge, you know, and the tailings dumps are actually like 40 meters high, clinging to the sides of these gorges like a tumor.
Yeah, like a tumor. What I wanted to know was how did Maitland respond to those, and his family respond to those overshots? What was their reaction to those shots?
It was a perspective that many Banjima people haven't seen before. You know, obviously it's the contamination zone is restricted. People aren't advised to go there. You know, people don't because it's...
Well, it's an evil place now.
Yeah, it really did feel sinister. I mean, you can't breathe there without feeling like you might get exposed to a deadly fiber. I mean, so we were going into this contamination zone. We had like a pretty rigorous safety plan put together by an asbestos diseases safety expert, you know, about what to wear and decontamination processes and disposing of any, you know, waste responsibly, you know. But we were walking in there with an elder from that country who had an asbestos-related disease as a result of exposure. So it was extreme, like the sinister nature of it was heightened from the beginning. We went pretty deep into where the main tailings dumps are. And, you know, we have this drone shot that goes for 5 minutes, which obviously we condensed in the film. And it just shows like the tailings dumps going for like hundreds of meters. And, you know, that is not a perspective many people will ever see unless they're flying over that site in a chopper. So for us, what we really wanted to do was bring this, you know, seemingly out of sight, out of mind problem for most people, but not for Banjima people, to bring this out of sight, out of mind issue into full view in the film. And it was really arresting. And, you know, Maitland and I had shown the Banjima Native Title Aboriginal Corporation Board those tailings dumps and that site, and everyone was just shocked because they didn't realise how bad it was. There's no interaction with country. Like, people have been cut off, and that's, you know, yes, for safety reason, but that has a profound cultural impact as well.
The film is going to theatres in November now, this month.
The film will be out in cinemas this month. Go and see it. We'll be running an impact campaign around it, and you can hear about how Banjima are running a campaign to clean up Whitnoom.
And that was Yara Abu Malham, and she was talking about Yula Country. That's Y-U-R-L-U. Yula Country. It's in the cinemas right now, and coming up next is Published or Not. We'll go out with Native Tongue, Moju.
Native tongue, was born under a southern sun. I don't know where I belong. I don't know where I belong.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.